and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q4 and year-end FY21 financial results for Agrotech Foods Limited conference call hosted by Anand Rathi Share and Stock Brokers. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Mehul Desai. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mallika. Good afternoon, everyone. On behalf of Anand Rathi, I welcome you all for Agrotech Foods Limited 4Q and Financial Year 21 Result Conference Call. From the management side, we have Mr. Sachin Gopal, who is the Managing Director, and we have Mr. Srinivas, CFO of the company. I'll hand over the call to the management for their opening remarks, and then we can open the call for Q&A. Over to you, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Mehul, and good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to our quarter four call. So what we've done this time is that we've made a small presentation. We have the normal investor release as well, and we've got a small presentation, about 18 pages, so not too long. Should be done in 30 minutes. And we'll walk you through that presentation. And after we can take questions and answers. Presentation is available already on the stock exchanges, and I think it's also uploaded now on the ATFL website. So, you know, I'm going to start walking through the presentation, and in case you haven't opened it so far, then my suggestion is while I've already started, you can just open it and, you know, catch up so page one, really, ATFL business update and a summary of our FY21 results. Page two, what is the vision of the company? Our strategic vision is clearly to be the best performing, the most respected foods company in India. And today we'll walk you through roughly where we think we are on that grid. In terms of page three, this really talks about the key performance highlights for FY21. Our focus is going to be on FY21. We'll cover up quarter four wherever it's relevant. So we saw, as you've seen, a robust 35% growth in our foods business. We closed with the revenues of about 349 crores. Our gross margin was up from about 27% on the foods business the prior year to about 31% in FY21. So about a 400 basis points improvement in gross margin. That was driven largely by mix, right? Because of the nature of products, depending on what is there, you know, how profitable they are, but also how much is the manufacturing cost to each one of those products, right? And a large part of this also came, therefore, from operating leverage. So it's a bit of both. And what our math shows is the structural EBITDA margin is about 15% plus, right? So we often get asked the question, you know, how is the journey going to be and how is it going to actually happen, right? We figure 15 to 20% is a reasonably good EBITDA range as far as food companies is concerned. Globally, I think the top of the line is 22, 24, depending on the share of nutrition, so on and so forth of this company. But 15 to 20 is a good range. And today we'll walk you through how we think our food business is stacking up to that. New products delivered about 500 basis points of foods growth. So this was within the range what we had targeted of about 500 to 1,000 points of growth. We could probably have got more, a little bit more from chocolates and maybe even from breakfast cereals. But on chocolates, we chose really to refine our architecture. And we'll walk you through where we think we are now on that. And on cereals also, we kind of took a little back seat in the first couple of months of the year while the lockdown was there, because we want to concentrate on our products like instant popcorn, peanut butter, where we have, you know, very strong shares. So this is really vital to us. So overall, I think food business, you know, good 500 basis points. As you know, our 10-year CAGR used to be about close to 14 to 15%. With last year, now it's got added into the 10-year CAGR is now 16%. And our task really is how do we actually, you know, take this up to about 21, 22%. And that's what this 500 basis points were designed to take us to cross the 20% hurdle, right? So we'll you'll see. Let's see what is the quality of that as we go along. Media investments. We had told you in the beginning of last year that this will be a year where we will not compromise on media. We were able to have a lot of savings in SG&A, partly helped by the reduced travel as a consequence of COVID-19. And this is the year that it was important for us to spend on the brand, and I think those investments have paid off very, very big time, right? As you see later in the ready to cook, we're still growing even in quarter four. So it's not that, you know, we saw a huge increase in quarter one to quarter two, and then, you know, we it really tailed off. It didn't. And we intend to continue this level of investment. This was true also that in quarter four, our media went up to about 4 crores, and you can see that in the advertising spending, which is very significant when you compare it to the profit before tax. But we figured it was the right thing to do, get huge momentum behind it so that we continue to, show robust growth in FY22 as well. This was a big deal for us, as we mentioned to you earlier. FY21 in our year, in our assessment, was a year in which food companies did get benefits, and clearly one had a choice, right? You could either allow that to flow to flow all the way to the bottom line, in which case, you'd subsequently have a problem in the future years, or you took the choice and you reinvested behind the brands so that you had a secure FY22, 23, 24, and we've gone in the latter direction. That doesn't necessarily mean it's right for every business. We felt it was right for our business. A good increase, and we are kind of back now to where we were in terms of advertising spend to about 4 or 5 years ago. We had a difficult 3 or 4 years prior to last year in terms of the oil's gross margin impact on the total P&L. That is obviously much more reduced now, and therefore I had to compromise on some investments, but I think that's behind us and we're in good shape. In terms of last year, our other significant impact that we decisions that we took is that we would use the savings that we got in SG&A along with the tailwinds that were otherwise coming to be able to do the realignment from premium edibles, right? We started carving that out in a separate section for you so that you could see that. That's basically Sundrop, Superlight and Heart. And the objective of this was that we would address the volume trends. And as you can see on a quarterly basis, that has absolutely happened. We've realigned the pricing. And I think we are in good shape as we enter FY22. The other, I think, highlight from FY21 is, and I'm on page 3 for those of you who join later, page 3 of the presentation, which is loaded on the stock exchange and on our website. Well, it's a complex base. And this will certainly impact year-on-year quarterly comparisons in FY22. So we'll try and give you a perspective on it right now so you understand why we are making this statement. Quarter 1, we basically had an elevated oil demand, as we're all aware. But it was also pre-price realignment. So we were still on relatively higher price premiums, which we felt were not sustainable, and that is clear from the volume trends of the earlier years. It reflects that high pre-priced realignment pricing and elevated oil demand. Now, quarter 2 and quarter 3, necessarily only those, but kind of in those quarters, there was a significant amount of doubtful debt provisions that we created, which we talked about earlier. In terms of quarter 3, quarter 4, and much more quarter 4 than quarter 3, we also saw very steep commodity price increases, right? The graph doesn't seem to be as aggressive now as it seemed to be 2 months ago. But obviously difficult to comment. But as we enter, therefore, we are entering on a higher commodity price level as compared to last year, and therefore pricing as well. SG&A controls, a lot of SG&A opportunities were there last year due to travel and also the fact, as I mentioned to you, we didn't really give any wage increases. we gave some amount by way of the compensation, but there were no annual wage increases. And therefore, there were a lot of savings there. And profit after tax, therefore, was up 7% versus FY20. Profit after tax, the comparison with prior year reflects the impact of the deferred tax reversal and some one-timers in FY21, which we can talk about. Okay, so which is really some provisions, etc., for which we took a conservative view as far as tax is concerned. All right, so page 4 really is the categories in which we compete in, which is, the five food categories and the one edible oils category. Our focus clearly is going to be on the five food businesses, though we will cover off the edible oils category as well. All right, so in ready-to-cook snacks, I'm on page 5 of the presentation now. You can see, and we've chosen this time to provide the turnover figures for each of the five food categories as well for it. And the reason now is that it's reasonably large, meaning there's a lot of products in each category, so we're not so concerned about, exact turnover figures for each business being available from a competitive perspective, and therefore we thought it was a good idea here. All right. So ready to cook, we closed with a turnover in the ready to cook business of about 216 crores. So it's actually our first category to cross 200 crores in revenue. That's a nice mark, because when we all started in the company, the turnover of ready to cook was about 14 crores, if I remember, in 2007, right? It's a very nice position to have climbed up to. And you can see the elevated oil, elevated demand is there in quarter two, where the, you know, volume growth of 64 and 60. So you could argue that you also have to take quarter one into account, you know, when you read that data. But equally, quarter four is also reasonably strong at about 48% value and 52% volume, right? So I would say one good thing that has happened is, at least we believe, enhanced media stands have helped us to protect share and drive sustainable growth. There's been a lot of competitive activity also. People have tried to take share from us, and I think largely we have been successful in holding on to our position and also therefore drive a lot of growth, right? We intend to continue supporting ready-to-cook popcorn as we go forward in FY22, and we've aligned that with the board, and therefore you can expect to see us continue to spend, and we will see what the how the trends are as far as FY22 is concerned on ready-to-cook and particularly ready-to-cook popcorn, right? One of our directors asked us, in fact, yesterday, says, you know, well, what do you think? You know, it's going to be a bit like last year, and our answer is no. I think it's going to be very different from last year. Because last year, a lot of people were in lockdown, but also not feeling so threatened, right? Today, there's no formal lockdown, but a lot of people are home. But also, a lot of people are spending a lot of money on medicines, medical supplies. These are really, many of these things trading at a premium, hospitalization, right? And in fact, it's, I think the mood is very different this year as compared to last year, right? So, I think we're going to work very hard. We have to work very hard to be able to continue. We've entered on a good momentum, but we need to keep investing behind this business. Okay. As we mentioned to you in the November call, a differentiated entry into pasta and noodles is due for FY22, and I'm sure that by the time we probably have our next quarterly call, we'll be able to share more details about that. We also believe we have a strong innovation calendar in place. One of the good things that happened because of COVID-19 is that because a lot of us were actually, constrained in terms of being work from home located, and actually the amount of work we were able to do on innovation was very high. The plants were running, we were able to do the work. So it's been very productive from that standpoint. And kind of it's brought our innovation calendar 1 year forward, right? Earlier, we would have said for FY22, we still have to do the following 20 things, right? But today, as we enter FY22 itself, kind of almost all of them are ticked. So we can now start talking about 1 year ahead, right? And this is why we're making this comment here. So we believe that we're in good shape, that by FY23-24, we can look at soups. So obviously work is going on that. We'll be looking at plant meats as well, right? So work is underway on that also. And cocoa and baking also is another area that we feel has potential for us, given our strengths, both our manufacturing and our marketing strengths and our selling strengths. That will also be part of the agenda for the next year. And obviously, by the time we come into November, in the November call, we'll be able to share more details with you. So overall, I think good, strong momentum on ready to cook. But, again, a note of caution there. There's a lot of elevated demand sparked in our base as far as FY21 is concerned. So we need to keep, working hard to be able to address that base. Okay. I'll now move on to page 6 of the presentation. Right. So if you see here, that's the ready-to-eat category. We had revenues of about 43 crores last year. You can see the clear impact of the lockdown in quarter one. Volumes were down about 36% and volume and value. Quarter two saw some recovery. But of course, around quarter two, we also started, imposing the full truckload system, from the plant. So that took a little while to settle in. But by quarter four, actually, we managed to get into a good growth, about 9% in volume and 17% in value. So on a full year basis, they're actually down only about 8%, which I think is probably true for the industry from whatever we understand. There was therefore a very strong recovery post COVID-19, and both RT and popcorn actually closed the year at about 100 volume index. So it's actually excluded snacks that tailed. I think we also got the benefit of some of the GST clarity that came on ready to eat popcorn, right? Because we'd always been charging 18%, and I think there were folks in the industry who were not charging 18%, and I'm sure that some of that volume also, the share came to us. So that's one of the benefits of actually continuing to persevere with the category, right? Over time, with the advantages that we have in the popcorn business, I'm sure we can have a very, very solid position in this category. Our changes in go-to-market and improved supply chain with Chittoor and Unnao now drove FTLs, our full truckloads, to more than 300 truckloads per month straight from the factory. 400 plus customers out of our 1,100 customers all are now taking full truckloads from the plant every month. So that's looking good. That's kind of more the model for low-cost snacks, because honestly, there is no money there to be able to afford double freight and also the warehousing rental and the hamali charges, right? That's because, you know, this is a very 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 razor thin margin business. But I think it's working very well for us, and I just come a little later to what steps now that we've kind of got a smoothened supply chain on how we actually think we can, while this category is very important for us to continue to drive our distribution expansion and retail distribution expansion, also how to improve the profit profile of the category. So I'll come to that. There was a low-cost learning on potato chips, which was initiated by us this year. As you know, we make potato chips at our own plant in Jhagadia, and right now we are only making it available in areas across the plant. Over a period of time, we will learn, and we'll actually be looking both at potato chips but also vegetable chips as the year goes along, because that has essentially the same profile and will probably be a more differentiated product. So give us a little while, and we'll talk more about that. Overall, I would say the strong quarter four performance. You can see the growth is about 17%. You could argue it's a little less, because remember, in the last 10 days of March, actually, we didn't really ship, right? Everything last year was closed. So you kind of need to adjust a little bit for that, right? But overall, I think a very, very, very strong performance, which sets the base for a robust growth in FY22, now leveraging the Unnao and Chittoor plants. So we believe we've done a lot of the supply chain work on this. Now what we need to do is work on the profit profile of this category, meaning if the category is available to us, it's fulfilling its role of being the conveyor belt for our total business, right? For all the other four categories, food categories that we drive hard and behind which we invest advertising money. But how to increase the profit profile of this? And because we are pretty diversified now in terms of product, the product portfolio, even though the total food turnover is not that high, it's not that it's a 1,000 or a 2,000 crore business today. It will be, but not today. But our portfolio is very wide. The number of commodities they're dealing with, etc., is very large. So I would say work is underway to improve the profit profile of the category, leveraging expertise in other categories, like chocolate. How do we leverage that chocolate category expertise to be able to improve our ready-to-eat snacks profile? So we'll talk more about it. And for now, it's just innovation work in progress, just for you to know what is FY22 looking like and what is 23-24 looking like. Okay, I'm going to go now to page 7. Here you can see we're really talking about spread. So we closed the spread business closed with revenues of a little under 80 crores in terms of total revenues for the category. That includes peanut butter, chocolate spread, hazelnut, almond chocolate spread, almond butter, and also hummus, right, which we launched just now. So the base peanut butter continues to drive very, very strong growth. And you can see really the exit rates are very healthy on this. Quarter two was 30%, quarter three is 40%, quarter four is 42%. So that leads us to believe that, we can look forward to continued sustained growth on the category. Obviously, there have been some ups and downs. There must have been some benefit with the elevated consumption during lockdown and all. But then remember, you can see that quarter three and quarter four are also very strong, right? And there were probably some downsides in terms of consumption last year because of, less gymming and therefore less amount being consumed for the sake of protein. But either way, whichever lens you apply to it, I think it's a very good way to end the year, right? It's a great year. So growth has been further accelerated by the successful launch of chocolate spreads and nut butters. If you haven't tried our chocolate spreads and nut butters, you should try them. I mean, our products are absolutely amazing, right? Okay. And don't take my word for it. Try it and ask your families and they'll tell you. So we are really well positioned because, we've got all these are made in-house. They're all innovation driven by our own team. We are able to, treat these as almost bolt-on capexes, so the incremental cost is not very high, and they're very, very competitively priced. You don't need to look far. You can pick up any of the e-commerce websites and see how we're doing, and it will be visible to you. We've also entered our depths with the launch of a differentiated hummus offering in quarter 4 FY21. We chose to go with a very different offering, so some of you did pick it up along the way in this quarter, right? So it's basically a combination of three pouches of chickpea paste, of tahini, and of seasoning, right? And it's a great product. It's an absolutely great product. And I think it will do well. This is not going to be as big a category as the peanut butter, but it's a nice enough category, and it'll help to defray manufacturing overheads, get some profit from us, etc. Right? A second product for Indifs is scheduled for FY 2022, so we'll talk to you about it as it comes by. Despite significant increase in competitive intensity in peanut butter, ATFL continues to be in a very strong position, right? As we mentioned to you last year, last call, we saw HUL entering the category with peanut butter. I've shown their spend in the later slides. We mentioned to you that Amul had also launched a peanut spread. In fact, a year ago, I think Marico had also launched a peanut butter, right? Often, this question will get raised. In fact, one of our directors there asked the question, when Marico raised a lot of peanut butter, he said, "But Sachin, they have so much more money than you do, right? It's going to be difficult for you." Our answer was not really, right? Because our products are so good and our products are so competitively priced, it is difficult for anybody to come in and take share from us, right? They may take share as a percentage share, but it only benefits us, right? We had mentioned to you that our estimate was that Leaguers had probably gained about an 8% share in the South where they are doing test marketing. We've seen some customer data now, which shows that it actually rose to about 8% in November, December, but then subsequently dropped to about 5%-6%. Again, I think our basic premise is clear. Sell products, great quality products, make them inside in your own factory so that you get tight control on the cost structure, give great value for money, and then even though you may not spend the same rate as competition, you'll actually be able to sustain your growth rates. Strong growth momentum as we exit FY 2021. Existing portfolio is sufficient for very strong growth in FY 2022. Honestly, we don't need to do anything. This itself is sufficient to give us the growth rate that we look for. Work is underway for entry into adjacencies. We are looking at what are the unmet consumer needs in adjacencies, and once we find them, then we'll certainly look at them. For now, for this year, we really don't need anything else. Everything is in place. It's launched. It's in the market. All right. Page eight on breakfast cereals. We more than doubled this business this year, and it doubled to about 9 crores, and we should be able to continue to maintain or accelerate this growth rate now. We have, as you know, significantly superior product offerings or value proposition in both granola and extruded snacks relative to competition. I'm sure you don't have to take my word for it. You can buy our products, you can buy their products, and they'll tell you, or you can privately ask them. I'm sure they'll tell you the same thing, right? The difference is clear. We make the products in-house, and our competitors get it outsourced by a third party. Bottom line, right? All the IPR is there with us. We also introduced Coco Shells, right? Which is extruded, what do you call it? Chocolate cereal products, right? That includes products like Kellogg's Choco, so on and so forth. We also got a fruity version. This is Rolls and Excels. This was introduced as per plan in quarter four of last year. It's been very well accepted, and I think it is going to propel us straight into growth. Once again, as in the case of spreads, we don't need any more new products in FY 2022, although we'll probably launch one more variant in granola somewhere along the year, but no hurry on that. This range itself, if we just get the distribution of this, we'll be able to get a significant share of our growth expectation for this year. We believe that we are steadily working our way towards being a strong number two in extruded cereals and granola, right? We believe that the current number two really in extruded is Soulfull. As you know, they are now, I think, going to be part of Tata Consumer, or they are. We believe that we have distributed manufacturing facilities. We have manufacturing facilities across the country for breakfast cereals, and therefore that puts us in a very, very strong position, and plus the fact that we have outstanding products, very differentiated products, right? We have the ability to sell great products competitively priced, and we already have an existing distribution network, which certainly can be underestimated, which covers about 400,000+ stores. Our existing portfolio, therefore, with adequate coverage across price points, we believe is sufficient for robust growth in FY 2022. Work is underway for entry into adjacencies in FY 2023 and 2024. All right. Chocolates. This was a very small business for us last year. We did only about 3 crores. As we mentioned to you, we took the opportunity for the elevated demand for other businesses to be really able to refine the architecture for that, place the equipment orders, et cetera, some stuff that was, some material that was required to be able to do that. We completed all that work, and in fact, today we have a 5 rupee bar, a 10 rupee bar, a 20 rupees pack of three, a 40 rupees pack of six, and an 80 rupee pack of 12, right? We are very well placed in terms of product price architecture, including a gift pack. This category is, we believe, going to be a key growth driver for food in FY 2022. I mentioned in the last call that actually I think in the long term this is going to be a big part of our valuation, you know, of the company. Because honestly, coconut centerfold chocolates are big, right? Bounty, I think, is amongst the top five candies in the U.K., and I think Hershey's Almond Joy, I think that's the one, is amongst the top 10 in the U.S., right? So these are big businesses, right? And even if you take a 5% or a 10% share of a 14,000-15,000 crore chocolate confectionery market, you're talking about 700,000 crore category potentially this could be. So just as we build ready-to-cook popcorn and we build peanut butter, we think this is a category that we are first in. We have got a fantastic product. We have honestly cracked the manufacturing process, right? We bought equipment over the last several years. Much of it was used equipment, put it all together, but we've got a great model in place, right? And we've got sufficient capacity for this to be a significant growth driver for us in FY 2022. Our national supply is under completion and, you know, which basically means all the cold rooms in all the warehouses, or at least all the warehouses that we see ourselves selling in FY 2022. And the product SKU range is, we believe, very well placed to address unmet consumer needs, both in terms of centerfold and portion control. So let me clarify. In terms of the centerfold, that's clear because, you know, we are the first movers in the coconut centerfold chocolates. Bounty is there, but it's imported and sold at very, very high prices. So it's not really relevant for the mass of the population, right? And as far as portion control is concerned, this is a big need, right? Because increasingly consumers want less sugar, right? But they don't want less sugar in the chocolate, right? You know, don't do that. Just give us a smaller portion. The problem comes when a chocolate company, as I mentioned to you, starts to deal with portion control, their packs become very expensive, right? And the consumer is not going to buy that, right? The consumer is going to feel cheated, right? So if suppose I sell a 5 or a 10 rupee bar of any of a chocolate for 500 rupees a kilo, and then I put those smaller sizes into bags, and then I sell the bags at 1,000 rupees a kilo, the consumer is going to find out. And that's what's happening today, right? And then he or she is going to feel cheated, right? They say, "But wait a minute, you know, why are you charging me so much more just because of the packaging?" I mean, that's your problem, right? Consumers normally expect a lower price the larger the pack. This doesn't necessarily happen. But certainly, this is a very, very significant increase. And because we configured our product right from day one to be able to handle portion control, you can see on page 9, there are three packs. The top three packs are all addressing portion control. For that matter, even the Delights pack, the gift pack is addressing it. So I think we are in very, very good shape. Further extensions into the chocolate category are under testing. So if you go to our website, you'll see things like peanut butter, peanut. Those are under testing right now for a national rollout in the next year. In FY 2022, we'll simply we have enough momentum going for us on simply the coconut range. Okay. Then in page 10 on edible oils, so premium edible oils, which is basically Superlite and Hearth, we closed with revenues of about 303 crores. You can see here, obviously, you can see the elevated demand in quarter one, but then in quarter four also, good volume growth. And you can see later in the back half of the year, the impact of pricing, right? You can see in quarter one, actually, value lagged volume. And then in quarter four, we took up pricing because of the huge increase in, you know, we had between 55%-60% increase in some of the oils that you buy. So that's a huge even if we wanted to correct pricing, which we were doing, we still had to take up the pricing. But now the gap versus competitors is very, 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 very low. And in fact, in many cases, I think we are kind of almost parity there. So that's leaving us in a very good shape. You know, FY 2021, as we enter, we are, you know, entering with a 6% growth in volume and a 20% growth in value, right? And we see this well settled down now in the entire retail market. So which is, you know, things like, you know, modern trade and e-commerce and, you know, high-frequency store, traditional retail. There are some customers, you know, where it's taking more time to get pricing season. And therefore, there, you know, we will also, you know, obviously take more time to be able to supply. But other than that, it's going well. In terms of mass oils, the revenues there were about 240 or close to 240 or crores. You can see here that in the early part, actually, in terms of mass oils, we saw the impact of out-of-home because restaurants and all were closed, and a lot of this was going there. But in the back half also, we also started to take calls because, you know, we started the process of pruning of mass oils. With the kind of growth that we have on foods, it's actually being able to support the entire supply chain. So as and when our design is that as we see a continued strengthen of foods, we'll continue with the pruning of this part of the business. And we, you know, we'll therefore you can expect to see over a period of time or at some point in the future, in a couple of years, when we completely offset the current revenues that we have on mass oils, and we'll figure out how to be able to continue to earn money from them. You can expect that a dominant share of the business will start to become the food business, and then there'll be the premium edible oil business. These will be the two big businesses that we are going to be focusing on. Okay, and obviously within that it will be on foods. All right. So comparative update. You can see here on snacks, we upped our spending significantly. As I mentioned, you can see on Act 2, we spent almost close to 10 crores in FY21. And you can see a very steady spend quarter on quarter, 1.3, 3.2, 2, 3. And we are not at FY17 level, but we're pretty much almost there. So that's the comment that I mentioned earlier, that we had to reduce our media investments. That part has been done now, and I think we feel very good about that. In terms of the competitors, basically ITC, Bingo remains the dominant, has become frankly the dominant spender now, right? And it's a huge increase, about, you know, after spending about 125 odd crores. And Lay's actually is now, Frito-Lay is now number two, right? And in some respects, probably a distant number two to ITC, right? Then in spreads, you can see Unilever was very steady on Kisan Jam. They spent about close to 70, a little under 70 crores. So if you assume that, you know, they're spending their turnover. I'm not sure what the turnover is of Jazz, but let's say it's in the 250 to 300 crores. And if that is the figure, then they'd be spending about, you know, 20-25% of sales in that. Both Dabur and us increased our spend. Dabur increases on honey to about 36 crores. We increased our spend on peanut butter from about 2 crores last year to about 6 crores this year. Again, as you can see, it's almost in line with the historic, what's the peaks that we had. In fact, the peak on peanut butter was in FY16 when we spent 6.4 crores. So kind of back to those levels, healthy brand investment, now that, you know, that drag of edible oils is behind us and we're not getting constrained by that. And both Marico and Unilever spent about 20 odd crores, right? It's funny, the numbers of both are 19.6. So obviously this is as per the, you know, the media spends. But both of them spent about 20 odd crores on honey and peanut butter respectively. So we'll see what the outcome of the peanut butter launch by Kisan is in South, and we'll understand and get a little more data. And Saffola obviously spent the money on honey in line with their, whatever with their corporate objectives. So other than that, Weber spent money, but most of this 5 odd crores I think is in print, right? And probably focused around Northern India, I'm not sure. Breakfast cereals, this category, Kellogg's, Quaker and Saffola remain the primary spenders. We have not yet started spending, and we'll see how this category goes for us, right? And Nestle supported the relaunch of their Nestle Cocoa Crunch. They spent about 12 crores. But other than that, not much change. Let's see how our competitors are able to continue to spend as we, you know, start to take share in this category, right? So, and Cadbury's made an entry. As you know, they launched a product called Cadbury Bonvita Chews, and they spent about 2 crores on that. In terms of chocolates, the competitive spends, Mondelez, Nestle, and Ferrero really remain the dominant spenders in chocolates, right? And we can see that they continue to spend very aggressively. Even Hershey's, I think, has continued to spend, albeit on a slower base because of the lower volume. I think probably the company that we can probably reduce their spending a little bit because of Mars this year, right? So, but other than that, not much change to report. Right, and we track this obviously to understand what is in the category, and you know, since we have an interest in the category now, and that doesn't mean that we're going to advertise in the category in FY22, but obviously at some point in time we will start. So we'll see. In terms of edible oils, competition spends, you can see our spending is zero. It's been zero in 19, 20, and 21 for about 3 years. Saffola was there, a tad lower than last year. I'm not sure why, but that's good. And Fortune and Emami, so Adani and Emami really becoming the dominant spenders in this category. And this bears out our hypothesis, right? This is a category with low moats, weak moats, and over time it's going to be people, you know, who are really focused on scale rather than premium pricing, who will be able to spend more because the fund, sum of funds that they are able to earn from the category is much greater through volume rather than premium pricing. And it therefore supports our hypothesis that, you know, share of premium oils is obviously dipping, and it'll continue to dip, right? And it therefore supports our basic hypothesis that this is a category where in the long term it will be very difficult to justify premium pricing, and therefore it's not a good investment from a shareholder perspective to invest behind this category, right? And that is the reason why we didn't invest money, and we chose to invest our money in foods, and it really supports that. We'll continue to see this over the years. And obviously, if the premium oil share of spending continues to drop, then it will be around the hypothesis, right? Because you cannot have a premium category that doesn't have a dominant share of spending. The whole thesis of premiumness built on price is that I'm able to convince consumers about paying the superior price for the category because I'm spending that much more. But if your share of voice is falling, then there is no way you'll be able to sustain that. So you will either not be able to sustain the volume growth you were looking for, or you will not be able to sustain the margins that you had. Those are the two consequences that happen. I think we are in a reasonable space as far as this is concerned. We've done our pricing realignment mostly, and we are therefore in good shape as we start next year. We do not need to start advertising this category, right? Now, many of you asked two important questions. I'm on slide 17, so I'm just going to take a few minutes on this to explain, you know, why you know, this question often, you know, why don't you guys just use third-party manufacturers? Why are you so hung up on having your own plants, right? And, oh, by the way, why don't you spend more advertising money? Because, you know, you can spend the advertising money, but, you know, it'll reduce later. We don't believe that works in the food business. So we're going to walk through this panel to be able to show you why we believe that our way is the right way for building a high-quality, profitable food business. But first, just two comments. One is, we believe that in-house manufacturing enables differentiated, superior quality, comparatively priced products, right? So that chocolate product that you saw, that coconut center film, we won't be able to get it from a third party. Because no third party makes it, right? It's the innovation. Or we have a great chocolate spread, right? I mean, it's outstanding. The almond one is great, and the hazelnut one is great. You know, it's one after the other. We won't be able to do that with a third party because we'd be relying on his manufacturing capabilities. So the beauty of this model is that you are able to build your own capabilities. Obviously, it's hard. It's a lot of strong work because you've got to set up all these plants. You've got to do all the R&D. You've got to buy the machinery. You've got to do the trials. You've got to take the cost of those trials, right? There's a significant cost of launching new products, right? This is there in our P&L even last year, right? But the payoff is huge because you can have great differentiated products. You can have absolutely superior quality products. You look at our breakfast cereal products. And they can all be very comparatively priced, right? Because it's all part of in-house, and then you can take a call, right? You can say, okay, I haven't got the scale right now, let me price here, et cetera, et cetera. You know exactly down to the last rupee what your manufacturing costs are. It's all in your control, right? And there's no money being paid out to anybody else. And that's the beauty you can see on net sales last year. And that's why we've called it current structural, right? So this is not it's not a reporting figure in terms of our food business. Say, what is your EBITDA margin on food? That would lead to a lot of questions. How do you allocate SG&A, et cetera, you know, right? But it's just, what's the structure of your food business? So we, on net sales of 349 crores, we had gross margin of about 107 crores. Now, just by way of clarification, gross margin here means net sales less cost of goods. Cost of goods means raw material, packing material, all the manufacturing costs, right? All the manufacturing costs, including the cost of the head of manufacturing, is all there, and primary freight, right? Secondary freight and warehousing is not there. That we include under SG&A, okay? So our gross margin for the food business was about 31%. As I mentioned earlier in the presentation, that is about 400 basis points higher than last year. We spent, as you can see from the spend figure, we spent about 17 odd crores last year. That includes the media plus artwork, production costs, and so forth, right? So basically, advertising as a percentage sales is 5%. We spend about 2% on promotion. So our A&P percentage is 7%. Right? Depreciation was about 5%. You know the depreciation figure in our total P&L. And therefore, most of it is on food, so very little on oils. So if we think it will be in the region, we can assume it's about 5%. So if you take gross margin, less advertising, plus and promotion, plus depreciation, that's about 29%. And our total company, SG&A, is about 13%. Right? If you see that note at the bottom, it says SG&A includes secondary freight, warehousing, and royalty payment. The three of these together are about, the royalty payment is the royalty payment to Conagra. If you look at the three of these together, they are about 3.5% of the total company. Right? Okay. So 13% is the total business SG&A for ATFL in FY21. If you just apply the 13% straight, that gives you an EBITDA margin of about 16%. So that's why we believe that we've got the right structure as far as our food business is concerned. In-house manufacturing, quality products, reasonable prices, low A&P, low cost overall, and you know, you've got a nice EBITDA margin, right? 15 to 20% is a good range for us to have and keep working on. So we believe the key questions going forward will be, how do we use mix and operating leverage for further margin improvement, right? How do we manage that piece of it? We have assumed that, you know, we can get to from our 16% 10-year CAGR to about 22-23% with the new portfolio that we have, that assumption may mean, okay, we probably need to spend another 100 basis points or something on advertising, right? But it's going to be in that range, right? So we'll have to tweak that as we go along, right? We've always told you we believe a AMP rate of about 7 to 8% is reasonable. So, you know, maybe it should be broadly in that ballpark, right? And how do we manage SG&A tightly, right? So that over time, right, we are able to absorb some amount of increase, right? If some amount of our mass oil volume gets substituted with profitable food volume, then the SG&A percentage is still the same, right? The absolute money is the same. Whereas we will need money for wage increases, there'll be some amount of inflation. So how do we manage this second? There's some could be opportunities in secondary freight and warehousing. How do we you know, how will royalty pan out? A lot of our new products that we're planning are actually going to be under the Sundrop brand, so that will have some positive impact. So overall, I think these would all be considerations. But bottom line, what this chart says is, you know, the food business is really structurally in a very sound place. And if you still have any doubts, my suggestion is, you know, you can, we've given you spends of a whole five different categories and multiple brands. You know roughly what are the gross margin rates which different companies share with you as a course of analyst call, and you can do your own match, right? You can say, okay, you know, if this is the spending, and just assume that if a company spends more on advertising, they're also going to spend more on sales promotion. Because the more you spend on advertising, the more you have to spend because you don't get the return on your advertising, and then you can calculate. And our guess is that if we were running a 3P type of business, probably our EBITDA margin will be just break even, right, with a 20% advertising spend, even with a lower SG&A. And probably if you have in-house manufacturing, but with a high A&P model, probably in the high single digit would be your EBITDA margin. But it definitely won't be in the 15 to 20% range. Okay? So, you know, these questions will continue, and hopefully this chart will provide you some answers on why we believe we are doing the right thing for the business. All right. So that brings me to the last slide. It's 45 minutes, but I think hopefully this will give you a clear picture. It's been a transformational year for ADFL. Food business close to 350 crores with a structural EBITDA margin of 15% plus. Ready-to-cook crosses 200 crores. That's close to 80 crores. Premium edible oil price realignment undertaken. Strong innovation across all food categories. We will leverage this to deliver steady growth. And actually becoming the best performing, most respected food company is really no longer just a rallying cry. The structural construct of the food panel is clearly representative of, you know, it becoming a reality. Okay, so with that, we'll go. You already have the advertisement, right? And, you know, you would have gone through the total. I'm happy to comment on any question that you have in relation to the ad or any other strategic question that you may have. So, ma'am, over to you. And, you know, there were if you could just take on the questions, right?
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is...
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
The first question is from the line of Parshi Pantaki from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good afternoon and congrats on a good set of numbers. My first question is on your foods business, this P&L which you have given. So in that, basically the gross margin of 31%, is that what you are already achieving right now? That is one part of it. Second part is this 13% SG&A. Includes primary freight, warehousing, royalty. That is fine, but you will have so many other expenses in terms of your selling and marketing staff, stationery, rent and taxes. I mean, there's a whole litany of expenses which would drive it more than this 13%. And thirdly, this 15 to 16% EBITDA margin, at what scale do you think that is actually going to come through? You are at 350 crore. Do you think it comes through at 500 crore, 700 crore, 1000 crore? At what scale does it come through?
Okay, thank you, Percy. So yeah, both very good questions, and you know, I'll try and answer them to the best of my ability, right? So the first answer is yes, this gross margin is actual. This is as reported, right? So we report the gross margin in our director's report also every year, right? And it is there. So this is the actual gross margin that we achieved last year, right? And which is Therefore, as I said, about 400 basis points improvement over the over the prior year. In terms of SG&A per se, so this is the I'll clarify. It doesn't include primary trade. Primary trade is already included in our gross margin. Okay, so our gross margin is after primary trade. Huh? Okay, so that's the way we do it. You can say no, do it this way or that way, but that's the way we look at the business, right? So this 13% per se includes everything. Right? So it includes that secondary freight, the royalty that I talked about, which is 3.5%. If you take out that 3.5%, the balance 9.5% is includes everything. It includes marketing, it includes sales, marketing, procurement, R&D, sales force, rentals, everything, right? Okay. that is consistent with how we run the company, right? We are a very lean company, right? And I don't know if I ever mentioned this to you guys, but you know, the other day, Shinu was doing the maths for me, for himself actually, and he shared with me. Outside of finance, sales, and manufacturing, we actually have only 28 people, right? There's only 28 people employed by the company outside of finance, sales, and manufacturing, right? So there's very few people. So our cost structures are very low because, you know, we would not be able to deliver the kind of P&L that we keep delivering if we didn't have these cost structures, right? So, and the last piece is, when would this be a reality? Well, you know what, we are roughly, let's say, you know, we are 900 to 1,000 crore company, right? So, if we were a 900 to 1,000 crore company with only foods, with no oil, which is obviously not going to be the case because we'll continue to have premium edible oils, it would have this kind of an EBITDA margin, right? Okay. So, certainly it is there. As I mentioned earlier, you can't treat it as a, you know, segment, profitability, etc. because, you know, then the question will come, how do you allocate SG&A, so on and so forth, right? But this gives you a broad idea of what are our cost structures like. Okay. So, thank you. Thank you.
Can I ask a second question?
Can I answer it at the end, assuming this time? I don't
think no problem. The question is that if you have to reach 1,000 crore in your foods business, what kind of further capex would you require cumulatively, assuming that 1,000 crore is reached without any completely new category?
Thank you, Basi. So all of you are very intelligent. So another investor who sent us this question. So to ask Mr. Manish Gandhi to ask this question.
sorry.
Okay, Basi, I'll answer it. Give me. It'll get answered. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Manish Gandhi to ask this question because he's already sent it in advance. So hopefully he's there. Otherwise, I'll answer the question.
Oh no, I was not aware anyone else has asked it.
And then I'll come to you, Basi. No, don't worry. I'll try and answer it.
Okay.
I was telling the moderator. Okay, ma'am?
Yes, sir?
Yeah. So this question was also asked by Mr. Manish Gandhi. Is he there?
Sir, he is in the question queue, sir. Do you want to unmute his line?
Yeah. If you could just unmute his line, let him ask the question, and then, you know, hopefully I'll be able to answer. It will get perceived question will also get answered.
Okay, just give me a minute, sir.
Hello?
His line is unmuted, sir.
Yeah. Am I audible now?
Yes, Manish, we can hear you. Carry.
Okay. So, good afternoon, and I hope you and your family doing well. Congratulations for good set of number. I think great set of numbers for food. And congratulations, Sachin, the most deserved another five-year term. And my questions are as follows, the four questions. So, do you feel our target consumer for ready-to-cook popcorn has expanded from more of a children and youth to the whole family after 2-3 years of OTT-driven demand, and especially during the last 1 year? And if yes, what changes we have done in our marketing strategy? My second question is, what organizational changes do we require for 1,000 crore food business? How are we planning for the same? And which is one area where within the company you feel that we need to improve the most? The third is, with huge demand created by OTT culture for popcorn, and if most of it that sustains as a habit forming, how do we plan to increase distribution disproportionately across the country? Are we planning to leverage new channels like Udans of the world? And the last one is, penetration of microwave in India is just 5%, but growing rapidly, especially during current times. So can you share some data from any other country, how this rising microwave penetration affect the ready-to-cook popcorn sales over a longer period of time? That's all from my side. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Manish. So I'll try and answer those questions, and firstly, hopefully, that should cover off the point that you also raised. So in terms of target audience for ready-to-cook popcorn, we are sure that the number of, we have acquired new consumers. Otherwise, we could not have sustained that 48% growth that we have in quarter four, right? And because after the lockdown, it would have seen a very severe, reduction down to 20% or 15% or something like that. What is the nature of the profile of the consumers that we have? We haven't done the work on that as of this point, right? We are obviously constrained because of, all the challenges of the pandemic. But as and when we have a better understanding of it, we will certainly brief you about it. In terms of the 1,000 crore business, I think here's the important point, which is both the question on organization and on capital, right? Which is, what do we really need? So let me give you a perspective. In terms of organization, I think the design that we have is going to continue to work, right? One of the key things in the food business is you need to have a very close end-to-end coordination between the consumer and the manufacturing person. It needs to be very close. So you don't want to put too many channels or partitions in between it, because that can obstruct the flow of innovation and thinking to deliver to the consumer some products that are going to satisfy their unmet consumer needs. So actually, and that is the reason why you see most food companies in the US actually grow through acquisition, right? Because the entrepreneur is able to do that. The entrepreneur doesn't have all these multiple departments and people and lots of hierarchies, right? He or she is able to do that complete end-to-end understanding and closing. So we actually, to the extent that we would like to continue to be as is. One of our other investors had also asked us this question, some months ago, and my answer to that was this only. We don't foresee a lot of organization change. We might have more people, yes, but it's not that we want to create walls and silos within the company. We will not be the kind of company that we are if we did that, right? So that will be one. In terms of CapEx, it's a good question. See, we have about, our gross block today is about 300 crores on foods, on which we've got a turnover of about 350 crores. So we're getting turns of 1.15, something like that. Let's call it 1.2 rounded off, right? Now, when we did the last survey of most of the food companies, the good food companies, including companies like Maldives and all, the turns that they were all getting were between 2 and 2.5. In many cases, the turns were less than that also, but 2 to 2.5 is what I remember as being a good number, right? So we obviously would like to be at 2 or more, right? Because if you want to be the best performing, most respected, then we need to have a great EBITDA margin, but we also need to have, good CapEx turns, everything else, right? And so therefore, if you say a 1,000 crore business, if I take 2 turns, we probably need about 500 crores of gross block, right? So if I'm able to do 2.5 turns, I could do it in 400 crores, right? On the other hand, if I could get to only 1.6, then I'd probably need, you do the math, it would be about 600 crores, right? So I think we're doing well. We are now at about 1.2, and that includes everything: plant, land, building, machinery, the works, infrastructure, right? A chunk of that is actually the infrastructure, right? Because most of these have been greenfield projects for us, but now more and more projects are going to be brownfield. So I suspect that we expect to improve our terms. It will probably go, say 1.2, 1.4, 1.6. That's the kind of, graph that we think we should be able to get. So we feel that to get to 1,000 crores, our internal cash flows and the money that we generate should be more than adequate, much more than adequate to be able to deliver those kind of capacities, right? And even today, it's not that we are running at 90% capacity, right? So we are in a comfortable chair. In terms of popcorn, disruption, distribution, yes, we deal with everybody. We are self-made, right? So we deal with everybody. Right? We don't have preferences between one customer and the other. For us, every customer is God. So yes, I think we were talking to Oran recently. I'm not sure whether we already listed there or not, but either way, if it hasn't happened, it would happen, right? They're all our friends, everywhere in the industry, but they're all our customers, right? So we will leverage every channel, whether it's an Oran, a Metro, or a B2C. But yes, one question consumers do ask is, it has become a little popular, particularly in the US, for customers to talk directly to consumer, B2C, right? And, big CEOs of big companies have talked about it. Our answer has been no. We are not going to be retailers, right? And we are FMCG companies. We want to concentrate on our branding, on our brands, on our products, and on servicing our customers. Our customers may have private labels, right? But we have also seen in the industry that customers who have said, by the way, I'm going to have private label and I don't need brands, wrong. very long. You know it, and you know the results have not been great, right? So it's, I think there was an interview with the CEO of Walmart about 5-6 months ago. It put very nicely. He said, see, we need private labels, but we need brands. We need both. We all coexist together, right? So, you know, a retailer can have a private label. They should have a private label. Why not? If they can, if there are parity products that they can buy from somewhere else, right? If company A goes to a supplier, buys from that third party and sells to the retailer, then the retailer can also go buy straight from the third party. What's the big deal, right? And that's the vulnerability that you have. When you, again, rely on a 3P model, you are very vulnerable. Because you buy from the 3P, then you add your margin, then you go to the retailer. But the retailer says, but why should I pay you your margin, right? You say, well, you pay me for my brand. He says, yeah, but you know what? I've got my brand too, right? Then you say, okay, okay, but you know what? I'm spending a lot of money on my brand. I'm spending 20 crores, 30 crores, 40 crores. Yeah, oh, he's okay. You know, give me one or two of those crores also, right? All that money that you have. So that's the downside you don't know, okay? On microwave, I don't really have a lot of global data for me to be able to share with you, but I can tell you that in India, we've seen the dominant part of our growth come from instant popcorn, not from microwave popcorn. Right. So, you know, I think microwave will grow, but honestly speaking, the pressure cooker one is just as good for us. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. And we are expected. Okay, ma'am, we can continue.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shirish Pardeshi from Centrum Capital. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, Sachin. Good afternoon to you and team, and hearty congratulations. At least the dream run is here to happen, and I'm very happy to see now you're talking with confidence five categories. I have two questions primarily. I think we have spread too thin now, and my concern is now you have five categories. In the real world, how do you do the justice? Because if I look at all these categories like grocery or some specialized channel into the bakery and out-of-home consumption, so in terms of sales, probably if you can give some context where we are in terms of distribution, because all the products are not going to go to every outlet. So you need to have a skill set or specialization in the channel expertise. So how do you manage this? That's the first part. And the second part is that in these five categories, though you have said that you take a pride that everything is manufactured in-house, but I think somewhere the scale will talk about. So where do you think you will end up saying that, okay, now I'm not going to manufacture, I will go for outside or contract manufacturing.
Okay. Thank you, Suresh. Thank you. Good to have you. So I'll answer the first, both the questions. And, you know, I think the first is, how do you do justice? So it's a question that, you know, we often have debated internally within the company also, and which is that, hey, you know, there's all these products, but why would the consumer buy our products, right? Because they're not going to spend so much money on advertising. Why should she buy it? And even within the company, a lot of us, you know, a lot of people are not sure. I think they're very sure now. You see, the beauty of the system of high innovation, superior quality products, great value, means it creates consumers for you on its own. You place the product in the store, one consumer buys it. And if that consumer likes it, he or she comes back. Right? Okay? And that's for real, right? He just needs one consumer in a store. And then the retailer will keep that product. As my, in fact, this is a saying that my colleague, old colleague, Navneet Saluja, who's run GSK, which is now not listed, used to always say, but you need just one consumer. You get that one consumer, then it gives you all the other consumers. Right? So that's the beauty of having great value. Right, and you should see some of the comments that we get on our consumer feedback website. It is amazing, right? So I think you know, you just need that. After that, you don't need too much of expertise, right? You need to have great products. You need to be fair to our customers. And if you go to any of our distributors, customers, they will tell you we are a best-in-class vendor, right? And you know, we don't participate in a lot of conventions, as you are all aware. But on their own, they'll come back and say, you know what, Agrotech was amongst the best suppliers to the modern trade in FY21, right? So we just need to be good. We need to be honest to what we're doing. Be a good vendor, and I think we are absolutely we are okay. In terms of scaling up, about this is an important point, and I'll tell you. See, I think you need to have expertise in house, because if you just buy everything from somebody else, most of the expertise rests with them, and there's nothing unique to you. So the question that you know was asked about, we talked about private label and things, is a real question, right? If I go and buy from X, and you know, then I go to a retailer and say, by the way, now you take it from me, and you know, he says, but I can go to X and buy it myself. So in all this, you need to have something that you are selling yourself, and something that you can are willing to buy from outside. So it is not that we are not saying no, we'll not buy anything from outside. You know, we do buy ingredients. Of course, we don't make all our ingredients ourselves, right? So we buy seasonings from outside. So there might be many things that we are going to use, see us buying from outside, but they'll be mixed. They'll be blended with stuff that we make and where the IPR and competitive advantage is with us, right? So the key to this is finding unmet consumer needs, creating a differentiated product because of your own house manufacturing. And if that's the case, along with that, you can sell something with somebody else. So as we roll out some of our new products this year, I'll be able to answer that question to you in much better shape, right? But for a moment, we sell sweet corn. Sweet corn has a retorted pouch, which has a sweet corn in it, right? We pack it ourselves, everything. But we buy the seasoning sachet. We buy the seasoning from outside. Some of it we pack ourselves in-house, right? So we do. It's not that we don't. We make all of it. We buy the seasoning from outside. So you'll see some of this coming, these blends coming through as we talk over time. And you're absolutely right. It's a good way for us to be able to leverage, you know, available capacity for our own as we do in oil. So a bit of that will happen. But the key we continue to believe is that we need to have control, a lot of control and in-house control. Okay. Thank you, Sharita. Thank you. Both very good questions.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Kaustubh Bubna from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sachin. Congratulations on the great results, especially in the foods business. So I had two questions. Firstly, on your ready-to-eat business, so you are doing currently 43 crores of revenue in FY21. Could you please elaborate a little bit about how much revenue potential does the two new plants in this vertical have if you sweat the assets and expand distribution to the wanted level? That's the first question. And the second question is on the premium oil business. Thanks a lot for finally segregating it and giving a, you know, a proper plan for this business. But I just wanted to understand, what's the guidance on the premium oil business based on volume growth for the next few years? Do you consider this pricing realignment to give you sustained advantage for 3-4 years? Could you just talk a little bit about that too?
Thank you. Thank you, Kosa. I think they are both very important and relevant questions, right? So on the ready-to-eat part, yes, Kosa, much, I would say significantly more, okay? The capacities will be well north of 100 crores, right? When I say capacity, see, there are many types of capacities. There's base level capacities, which is things like extruders, popping kettles, chip cutters, chip lines, so on and so forth. Then there's downstream capacities, right, which is things like packing machines, so on and so forth, assortment-based, formation-based, so on and so forth, right? And other infrastructural parts. So when I say capacity, we probably have well north of 100 crores at a base level. We may need investments along the way in terms of some amount of, you know, lab buildings, so on and so forth. But we need to be very careful with that, and I'll explain why. You see, the ready-to-eat part of our business is the largest category that we compete in, right? It is like whatever, say about 35,000 crores in the category. And it's highly competitive, right? You have people making, you know, popcorn or extruded snacks, not so much tortilla chips. You can find hundreds of them across the country. The reason why it's very necessary for us as a company is that this is what enables our retail coverage, right? So when our salesman or our distributor salesman going into the market, he covers 35 stores. He can make a productive call in maybe, you know, 10 of those stores for ready to eat, right? And otherwise, our distributor will not make the money. And we also give our distributor more money on ready-to-eat snacks, right? Because it's more bulky. It takes more space in his van or rickshaw or whatever you pitch maybe. So it's actually the conveyor belt of our business. So managing the ready-to-eat business is a bit like, I don't know. I'm not a horse rider, but there is a saying, right, called riding a wild horse, right? So it's a bit like that. This category is huge. It has to be managed very carefully, and we intend to do that, right? I think we've set up the core. It's not that we are intending. We always said, you know, it's going to be seven places where we bought land. It's not going to be more than that. And this will be sufficient now for us to provide the muscle, but we actually have to be careful so that we don't lose money in this category, right? you can actually, the scale is limitless because the more distance you ship, the more you can sell. But the more distance you ship, the more it costs you to ship, right? So the available capacity is very high, but we have to manage this in context of all the other four categories. So this is the survival case or the conveyor belt for the other four, but needs to be managed carefully. Okay. So not a lot more assets that we are going to be deploying behind ready-to-eat, right? In fact, we might also be using some of those assets for things like chocolates, and we are using them. We've modified some of the equipment that we have around the plants for breakfast cereals. So more and more of this actually infrastructure base is going to be used for breakfast cereals and chocolates, which is obviously a very profitable use of it. But it's a very important component. See, in terms of premium wallet, our expectation has been that we would, once with this price realignment behind it, and I think we are kind of almost there, almost at the trough, right? Because remember, we started the price realignment sometime around middle of quarter two last year, I would say, right? So middle of quarter two last year. So the whole process will get completed by probably take a year to complete, right? It will be spread over two fiscals, but it will get completed by then. And I think as this goes through, we should be into decent single-digit volume growth. Right, value is a separate story, right? So, for example, if I look at our April month, you know, value is way ahead of volume, right? Because you know the pricing is much ahead because the input commodity price. But we'll have to keep looking at volume, right? And I think, as I mentioned, barring customers where we are still, you know, to get approval for the pricing, in all the others we are actually in very, very good shape to be able to get that single-digit volume growth that they're looking for in the near term. Absolutely.
Okay. And with ready-to-eat, just add on to that ready-to-eat question. It'll take 1 second. Right now, with everything shutting again for the time being, should we expect ready-to-eat numbers to be bad for the coming quarter because of the exposure to... is there much exposure to... movie theaters,
yeah, I understand what you're saying. So, Pasto, just bear with me. I'll come back to you with the answer, huh? Like I did with Percy. Okay.
Okay.
I'll answer. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, ma'am.
The next question is from the line of Anuj Gupta from Perfect Research. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good afternoon, sir. I'll list down my questions together. Given we have a decent sized portfolio now, should we now focus on distribution and advertisements instead of launching more products? The bigger players have around more than 10x distribution reach compared to us. Another question is, given that the food business has become self-sufficient on contribution metrics, any thoughts on divesting mass oil business instead of pruning it?
Okay. So thank you, Anand. Yeah, see, both distribution and advertising are very critical components, right? For you know, for an FMCG player like us, whether it is food or personal care, they are very important. Right? But we just have to be able to pace it out to see how the P&L, you know, how we are able to absorb it in the P&L, right? If you say I want to increase my coverage by 100,000 stores, that costs you money, right? Whether it's 5 crores or 6 crores, it's going to cost you money. Ditto on advertising. You know, you say, I want to take a big bet on this category, like say chocolates, one of our director series. So why don't we take a big bet? And we say, yeah, but you know, let's just build the base of this, right? So the moral of the story is that you need very steady. You need to just keep steady, you know, and it's very frustrating, right, at times, okay? You know, you just need to keep plodding away, and you get it there. That's what we've done over the years, right? The business and that kind of structural P&L that we showed you is a result of several years of work, right? Hard work. And obviously the several more years of hard work which are required. Right? So don't expect us to suddenly say, now we're going to spend, you know, 20 crores, let's say. You know, like we saw, like Unilever spent 20 crores on peanut butter itself, Marico spent 20 crores on honey. Don't expect us to do that, right? Our P&L can't afford it. And by the way, we don't think it's so good for our business. It may be good for somebody else's business, it's not good for us. It doesn't make good business sense to us, for our business side. For somebody else, obviously, it makes good sense for them and they do it. Right? But we will continue to plod along. The beauty now of the portfolio is that actually you give more muscle to your distributors across the board. Right? And it's all little. But it adds up and it actually doesn't distract. So when we launched this hummus, you know, one of our area managers, he obviously, you know, who knows hummus, right? Hummus is such a small niche business. So he said, Bob, ye homo zoma hai kya? So then he had to explain to him, yeah, you know, this is why he's got chance. So, you know, but being a good sales guy, he didn't say, yeah, this is not going to sell. So he said, okay, okay, sir, done, you know, we'll distribute it, you know, wherever, in some limited distribution. Then after about 1.5 months, he comes back, we're in a meeting. So I said, you know, how's it going? He says, you know, I didn't think it will sell, but it's selling through some of these stores. He's very surprised, right? So that's the thing. So, you know, the question that Shirish was asking about channel, if your value is good, your product is good, it will settle through. It will find its way. It will settle through naturally, and it will create its own platform. Okay, right. And the second question that you raised is, when is the food business self-sufficient? See, let's see. The mass oil business today is about, you know, 230, 240 crores. So it's not that large, right? So certainly, I think in, you know, a couple of years, we should be able to more than offset that. And we'll figure out ways of, you know, how to, it doesn't make a lot of money, but it does make some money. Wherever it makes money, it's okay. We'll figure out how to be able to, you know, how to be able to manage those assets so that we can continue to make the money. But per se, I would say, let's say, you know, the food business gets to about 750 crores. It doesn't seem to be unrealistic at this point in time. Or, you know, then you add another couple of hundred crores for the premium oil, 300-400 crores. Yes, the answer is at that point, you won't need that business at all. Right? So, but we'll see. And that is why we are keeping it open. We're doing it bit by bit. And we'll see. It is a necessary business for us to support our supply chain, to support our distributors, right? I think we've moved on. The boy has grown up a little bit. Boy or girl has grown up a little bit. Okay? So thank you, Anis, for asking the question. Ma'am, there was one or the two other questions that I had pending. So may I answer them, or how are we doing on time now? Mehul, how do you want to do it? We're out of time, right?
Yeah, sir. You can answer those questions.
Huh?
You can answer those questions first. Yeah.
So, you know, and I would encourage, you know, if there are some specific questions from investors, do let Jyoti have them in advance, and then, you know, we can try and ensure that all those points are entered. So one of our investors asked us, you know, and said, and this is in the context also of this part about, you know, one of you had raised this point, you know, are you spread too thin now in terms of too many categories? So the answer is we'll take it, you know, bit by bit. So for example, one of our investors asked us, you know, why don't you look at things like taco shells and Mexican food? And the answer is yes. You know, we certainly look at it, and then we evaluate. In many cases, we actually even get equipment. We've got equipment costs, but then we decide which categories at what point in time. So we are also concerned about spreading ourselves too thin. And I think one of the questions we had already been asked about was on CapEx, right? So I think we've already been able to answer that question. We are not looking at a huge ramp up of CapEx in the near term, right? We're going to continue to spend. We have, as you know, consistently, you know, spent within our cash flow that was available to us. And we don't see ourselves going out to borrow to, you know, to invest in CapEx. Our P&L can't afford it, but steady CapEx we will continue to do. Okay. And also the question that was asked on, let me see, oh my God, I missed that. So my bearing is terrible. So maybe Jyoti can just come back to you with an answer of that. Okay. All right, ma'am. I think that's it from my side. Should we close the meeting? How do you guys want to play it? Or do you want to keep it open?
Would you like to take further questions, sir?
I'm okay. If the audience is okay, I'm okay to go on for another 15 minutes. Whatever everybody wants. Mehul, your call.
Yeah, it's okay. Then we can take.
Sorry?
Okay.
We can take few more questions.
Okay. So go ahead, ma'am. Huh?
Okay, sir. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Chirag Patel, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hello.
That's Chirag.
Yeah. Hello sir, I have a few questions I'm putting all together. Like, what will the effective tax rate from next year onwards? And the second question, what is our current contribution of oil business in full year turnover? And the third question, many other developments in this FMCG industry ongoing, like yesterday the news of that Tata brought the big basket and all. So, where we find our position in industry, in terms of offering our product through different SKU and at different distribution channel, do we added any new agents or because I have seen in your website you posted like you are hiring for the sales personnel and all. So is there any plan to push the sales forward post this COVID wave over?
So I'll answer the question, but briefly, you know, if you open the presentation, you can get the contribution this time. We've provided the numbers for each of the categories. Okay, so the food business is about 40% last year of the business, and the oils business was about 60%. Right now, on the tax rate, it's basically this year there are these one-timers that are there. Otherwise, we will revert back to the normal tax rate. Right. So Shinu can give you a better answer than that. So she can just explain to Chiraz what would be your expectation of the tax rate in FY22.
Chiraz, thanks for asking the question. Okay, the effective tax rate for the next year will be 25.2%. That is in the next year we are expecting to happen. It's in the we are in the reduction tax rate. Okay, that is will be affecting the next year. This year only it is in a one time has just come. That's what the tax rate is. Effective tax rate this year is a little bit higher. And next year it will be 25.1%.
Thank you, Sam. Okay.
Thank you.
So, thanks, Chira. Huh? Okay.
Thank you.
Just look at your mail also. Thanks. Thank you, man. Go ahead.
The next question is from the line of Dhanul Desai, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Hi, Sachin. Congratulations for good numbers and also congratulations for reappointment. Three questions. The first one is on chocolate piece. So, you know, we've been talking about this chocolate piece and, you know, we think that it can be a very large business for us, maybe, you know, 400, 500 crore. What kind of distribution reach we will require to get to that level? You know, I'm sure it will be much more than what we have today. So, I mean, what's the plan to get there? And, you know, given what we have today, you know, do you think that in 3 years we can reach 40, 50 crores? That's the first question. Second question is on the oil side. So I think, you know, we shared a bit of a business on the mass edible oil side. So is that, you know, is this a new base or new normal or is this more of a tactical call that we have taken? And out of 7 crore loss on the gross margin side, shedding of the mass edible oil business contributed, how much if you can kind of call out? And the last question is, you know, if you look at FY21, two of our largest categories, you know, ready to cook and spreads have done phenomenally well. And we are on a very large base. So, you know, going into FY22, how do we plan to grow on that higher base? You know, if you can elaborate on that.
Okay. So, thank you. So, I would say, see, on the chocolate piece, in terms of distribution reach, I would say a company like Cell, my Mondelez is really the benchmark, right? They have the turnover, they have the scale, and they have the dominance in the category. Their reach would be much more than us. Okay. So let me clarify. In a city like Delhi, NCR, it is possible that our coverage and Mondelez coverage is not very different, right? Okay, because we've done a lot of work in these cities, and you know, because we had the product portfolio, we were able to do the retailing. I would say we are not very different. The last time we checked the numbers, right? That was a while ago. In fact, I think we had done a comparison with all India, North India total for Mondelez, and it wasn't too different. But as you go deep down, so I remember I had visited a distributor in Agartala some years ago. And he was a super stockist for us, and he was also a super stockist for Cadbury. And the number of towns that he was covering for Mondelez was much more than us, right? So I think the town coverage, if you will, or the effective town coverage that Mondelez would have would be much, much greater than us. Right, that is where the difference will come, and that is where the portfolio becomes important. So let me clarify. See, if a company says I'm available in X number of towns, theoretically you may be available in X number of towns, right? We have a distributor, but suppose you don't have scale in that town, right? We are not likely to be able to you know, have a viable distribution network there. Then that distributor, and that used to be the case with us also many years ago in Northeast, before we set up the plant. You have a distributor, he's covering five retail outlets in that city. So technically, if you ask anybody in the company or in sales, how many towns? You say, I'm in so many towns. But that's not great coverage, right? For the distributor to have a solid coverage in the town, he needs momentum. He needs mass, right? That is why, you know, people, companies that compete in single categories, they really struggle. Because you might have 800,000 crores turnover coming from one category, right? Any category. Could be spread, could be breakfast cereal. But that is very weighted towards the top end of the market, right? It is weighted towards the top end of India. So, you need that portfolio to be able to give that distributor that momentum. So, he makes enough money. So, you can say, hey, buddy, you know what? I want, in this town, I want 80 retail stores covered, not just the five. And then you say, but where's my return? And you say, wait a minute, look, I've got bag snacks, I've got chocolate, I've got ready to cook. And you talk from a very different space here. Okay? So I think those are the pieces. It will happen. But it will be gradual. And certainly, you know, 40, 50 crores our ambition over the next couple of years will be much more from that on chocolate. Let me put it to you this way. One of our investors, so hopefully this will answer your question better. One of our investors asked me the other day, you know, so at 750 crores, what do you think will be the breakup, right? Of business, how will it look? I think, you know, probably maybe 300 crores on ready to cook, 150 crores on spreads, and 100 crores in all the other categories, right? So we would like to grow chocolates and breakfast cereals, and in fact, we would like to grow them faster than ready-to-eat snacks, because ready-to-eat snacks will provide that conveyor belt, but we'll make more money to be able to get that EBITDA margin that we want as a company. We need to focus on these more profitable categories. And by the way, we have the infrastructure to be able to deal with them. Okay? And new phase. No, nothing tactical. See, many of you have asked this question to us. So what will you do when actually, you know, more than 50% of your gross margin comes from edible oil, from foods? And that happened now. About 60% of it is coming from food. So our answer to that always will be, you know, when we get there, it will be clearer in our mind also. We are not geniuses that we have all the answers to all the questions, right? And we said, but certainly it will look different. If you go back to my our AGM last year, I said that. I think, you know, we had said it's going to be different. The boy has grown up now, or the girl has grown up now. And, you know, and one of the things that we did is we realigned the premium oil pricing, because we don't, you know, that role is done. The category, the premium edible oils has played the role that it needed to play in terms of, you know, providing us the money to be able to build these plants, support the food business, and the food business has grown up, right? Similarly, mass oils is also has played the role that it needs to do. It needs to stabilize our supply chain. We needed our distributors to get that turnover, but there's a cost of focus, right? You're not going to run a very, very low margin business, you know, and on an ongoing basis, right? So that's why. So it's not tactical. I think I would say you can argue. I would say it doesn't strategic makes it sound like it's, you know, we thought it through 5 years ago, and I think the answer is no. I think we just take it as each phase goes along. Okay, but we'll do the right thing. And we'll keep you updated on what we are doing. Okay? All right. So I think hopefully that answers that question as well. And we can go to other questions. And thank you. Huh? And ma'am, also I have promised also that I'll come back to his question later, but I don't remember what the follow-up question was. So if you could ask him what the follow-up question was.
Sir, I'm sorry, sir. You want me to unmute someone's line?
No, Mr. Bubna, I told him I'll come back to him on his unanswered question, but I can't read my own handwriting right now.
Sir, so let me check, sir.
Okay, otherwise, just continue. Is there a question, then let's take a question.
Yes, sir, there is a question, sir.
Oh, then we still have time. Yeah, okay. Carry on.
The question is from the line of Samar Singh from TPF Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Just one question, clarification actually. You said the foods business is now 60% of the total gross margin. So is that so? Our gross margin for the whole business, so 180 crores, is that about right?
Yeah, about right. That's right. Absolutely. You got it absolutely right.
All right. Thanks. That's all.
Thank you for asking.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sharon from Longview Holdings. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. I just had a question on your social media strategy. You know, you talked about your A&P spend, so I just wanted to know a little bit more about your social media strategy, given that it can be used in a relatively low-cost way to, you know, appeal to millennials.
This is the operator. There is a disturbance coming from your line, sir.
Okay. But I understood his question, ma'am. No problem. Sure. Okay. And anything else?
No, just in terms of just the social media strategy. You know, given that if used well, it can be used very effectively.
Absolutely. Thank you. So if you mute your line, then that will address us. The operator will also be happy. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think on social media, you know, it's an evolving thing. Right now we are very focused on television. Obviously, we don't even do print or anything like that. And we are starting our journey on social media. So I think our initial focus is going to be more on Instagram and, you know, figuring it out. It takes time. It takes time to build it up. And those are skills that we are in the process of acquiring. And we'll certainly do that. But it's not like, you know, if you remember many years ago, you know, and I think I remember there was a director on the board then who said, you know, but why don't you spend more on social media, Facebook, etc. So we said, look, you know, for us, television is important. But, you know, the time will come when we will do that. So you will find that. I agree with you. I think social media is like, say, Instagram, you know, even if you just use the boosters, even those are cheap, right? But the point is that it requires a lot of human intense work, right? Instagram posts, you know, whichever way they are, you know, time consuming. They require intensity. And naturally, an individual entrepreneur can do that very well, right? Because they're doing end to end and they're focused on that, right? So we'll see. It will be a slow journey, but I can tell you that. But it won't be that we won't be there. We'll be there, but it'll be a slow journey. And it comes back to, you know, the strength of our headcount, right? As I said, we are 28 people outside of finance, sales, and manufacturing, and we have to manage our resources properly. Okay. Thank you. Thank you for asking that. It's a very relevant question. Okay, ma'am, over to you.
Thank you. As there are no further questions, I would now like to hand the conference over to the management for closing comments.
Okay, ma'am, just hold on. Just ask Mr. Bubna. I missed his question. So can you just come online and tell us what was the question I didn't answer? So I'm not guilty of shortchanging.
I'm look for Mr. Kaustubh might be there
yes.
In the.
Sir, the line is disconnected, sir.
Okay, fine. Theek hai, ma'am. Thank you. That's it. Okay. Okay, Mehul, over to you then. Yeah. Hello?
Yeah, any closing comments, sir, if you want to make? Otherwise, there are no more questions.
Okay, thank you, Mehul. So yeah, again, thanks, guys. Thank you, everybody, for joining in the call today. Hopefully, we were able to provide some more perspective and look forward to talking to you in a couple of months. Cheers. Bye now. Thank you, Mehul. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
On behalf
thank you,
of Anand Rathi, Share and Stock Brokers, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.